today. Thought of all the ways you made me happy, and wishing you had stayed. I fall to pieces without you, my love. I fall to pieces without you, my
everybody. Welcome back. The show has started. It has begun. I'm going to move something. Give me a second, everybody. Talk amongst yourselves. There we go. Okay. Hi, everybody. this is Inside the Music with Stereo Russ. I'm your host, Stereo Russ. I'm here live in the CFMU studios. If you're out there driving, drive safe. It is now officially dark outside. life is hard, but it's bright and sunny in the studio today, and I've got a great guest today. We got Ashton Prince in the house.
Price.
I knew I was going to do that.
It's okay.
I can't edit this.
No, it's totally fine.
Well, that's the show, everybody.
Yeah. We'll wait till Ashton Prince comes, and then we'll
have you. Is there an Ashton Prince?
No, but I used to be. I in college I had a friend named Paul Prince.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah, it's a last name. It's legit.
Ashton Price, for like Carey Price, the classic.
Exactly.
Yeah. There you go. In the house of Morph Productions, music producer. He's been around the block. He's seen all the technological changes, mm-hmm. and we had a great conversation before the episode. So I'm really looking forward to this one. So Ashton, before we get started. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is going to be great. Yeah. I'm excited about it.
So tell us all, whatever you want to tell us all about Ashton Price.
Okay, so I run a music production or audio production company called Morph Productions that just celebrated its 25-year anniversary. And as well, I also have a music project called This Boy Electric. And the idea behind This Boy Electric was... I believe that every producer should still have their own project in their back pocket so that they can do their own creative endeavors unencumbered by other people's opinions. Other people's opinions are great, obviously, but sometimes, you know, when I'm working with my clients, you know, there's going to be things we're not going to agree on, and they're the client, so I'm going to make sure that they're happy and go their way. So this Boy Electric is kind of like, no, this is going to be my way, you know? And then I also, just to keep it, personally, I don't think people really want to listen to my voice. And I didn't want to tie it to one singer because, you know, if something ends up happening with us and there's a falling out, then I have to kind of start all over again. So I just kind of grab different singers and co-write with them and do different songs with them. I give them some music and we co-write and it's great. So...
So obviously not to pigeonhole, you're a producer and you're also a musician, kind of artist. And I like what you said about how a producer should have their own creative project. Does that kind of relieve the pressure of wanting to put your own artistic spin on other people's work?
I mean, it definitely gives me that satisfaction. But as far as that need, I don't really have that need. Like, I always tell my clients when I first start working with them that I'm always going to give my opinion. doesn't mean you have to listen to them, you know, but I assume that they're not paying me to tell them how great they are all the time. So I'll always give my opinion, and then, yeah, they're either going to listen or not. And I learned, I think I used to take it a little bit more personally when I was first starting out that, oh, you know, they didn't listen to this the idea or that idea. And now it's like, you know what? I told them what I think. They don't want to go with that. I'm 100% fine with it. It doesn't bother me at all anymore.
Sometimes when you're so for those listening, audio producer, engineer, recording artist, not recording artist, but like someone who records recording artists. So when you start working with someone and they step into your studio, do you kind of get a sense, like, do you try and kind of feel out what they're looking for, like more hand holding? Like, is that something you kind of have to like tease out a little bit?
Well, it's funny. So I went to college for music production at Fanshawe, and I had Jack Richardson as my production teacher. He produced like the Guess Who and like a very big person in the industry. And he wrote his own textbook. And one of the chapters was the psychology of music producing and kind of just being able to communicate with artists and trying to get them to go in the direction that you want them to go in. It was really good.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
go in the direction you
want. Okay,
because shouldn't they go in their own direction?
Like, let me give you an example. Yeah, this is the way I describe it to my clients. Not ignoring what I had just previously said about completely always listening to them. If this is the simplest one, if my client says they come in and they say, my goal is to get on radio, which personally, I don't think any indie artist should really try to do that right now. It's not worth it.
But let's say
that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then they insist that their song has to be 5 or 6 minutes long.
Right.
That's a non-starter. It's a non-starter, right? So for something like that, I'll definitely push a little harder on that one and just say, well, this doesn't meet your goals. So that's where some of that psychology would have to go in, because you have to be a good negotiator too. You don't want to be too heavy-handed, and you have to. It's going to be different for every single person you work with too. Some people respond to this, some people respond to something completely the opposite. So
yeah. So what are some stuff that you've worked on?
I've worked on, so when I first got started, I worked on this project called Kazer, and that's kind of what really kind of got me going in a big way. I did the demos, co-wrote and co-produced the demos that got him signed to Sony in the States, which was kind of a big deal. And from that, I got a publishing deal from Sony Canada. And that honestly didn't work out so well.
I'm going to pause you there.
Yeah.
What is a publishing deal?
So a publishing deal is basically where the songs you write. So with song ownership, there's two sides of that ownership. There's the writer side and there's the publisher side. So when you sign a publishing deal, you either do a co-publishing deal where you're giving them half of the publishing side, which would be 25%, so you'd have 75%, they would have 25%, or a traditional publishing deal would be 50-50. Mm-hmm. And typically what will happen with a publishing deal is, especially with the bigger companies, the reason people really, like, they starting out especially, they really want to get them is for the advances. So kind of like, just like if you're writing a book or something, someone's going to give you an advance based on hopefully future royalties.
To write songs,
yeah. So for example, my deal was for 10 songs.
And then, okay, 10 songs.
Yeah, so it's 10 songs, yeah.
That you would just write and then they would ship it to different artists?
So you
write.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things that I struggled with my deal is that it's a little bit more than that, because you have to write the songs, but it's not, you also, in a lot of ways, you have to kind of develop artists. Like, so you almost have to be like the A&R person. You have to find that artist.
So you have to write a song and then find an artist in mind to, like,
yeah, make or that. Co-write the song with the artist. Cause a lot of times artists, maybe less so now, but still very prevalent, is like, you're going to co-write the song and with the artist, and you're kind of, and then you have to produce the song as well. Right. Like, because it's not like you're going to give, in 2024, or even like back when I, 2001, you're not going to give them some sheet music. Yeah. Say, here's my composition.
I honestly thought, like, hello, like, what is it?
Right? Yeah. So I really struggled with that being really young. I think I was maybe 21 or 22 and not as familiar with, like, full-on commercial music at the time. And so the idea of finding that artist, producing the song to the level that they wanted it at, and then also writing the song, obviously, was a real struggle. And then I also, like, I always kind of felt that, you know, and this is kind of with hindsight, looking back, is that I think I was kind of more like a lottery ticket for the whole thing, like, because...
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Because what happened is, around that time... Nelly Furtado had signed her deal, and she just blew up, right? Yeah. And it was her, and I think there was someone else.
Because she's local. Or no, she's Canadian.
I think she was from BC, and then she was in Toronto. Yeah, she was working with the Track and Field guys. And so she signed a U.S. label, and there was so much excitement when because she just blew up, right?
Yeah.
So Sony could give me the money that they gave me, and... hope that maybe that was going to happen with my guy as well, right? Yeah. And it didn't end up working out, but I was under the impression that, like, oh, you guys are really excited about me, you know? And I probably, you know, maybe I have this wrong, but I think in retrospect, I think they were just kind of waiting to see what was going to happen with this project, and if the project went really well, then, you know, let's see where else we can take it. And it didn't, and then I was just kind of left, like, you know, what am I doing here? Like, because, you know, I've always had a lot of energy, especially when I was younger. I had a lot more energy, and I was like, yeah, I want to do something. Like, let's do this, let's go here, let's, you know. I remember I went to Montreal because I was working with this this big death metal band, Cataclysm, on this other project, and they're from Montreal, and I went to visit them, and I remember telling Sony, like, hey, I'm going to Montreal, and, you know, is there anyone else, maybe I can write and get on a writing session or something. And they're like, nah, I don't know, we don't really, you know. I'm like, okay, you don't know anybody in Montreal that, like, you know. So I tried, and it just didn't work out. But so that was one thing that I did.
That was the publishing.
That was the publishing thing, yeah. I think maybe in retrospect it would have been a lot better, especially for what I do and what I'm interested in, is if I had signed with a smaller publishing company that was genuinely interested in kind of developing me. Because that's the other thing you want a publisher to do. You want a chance to make the money back. You know what I mean? You don't want to just get that advance and then that's it.
Yeah.
The advance is supposed to be an advance on future royalties. Yeah. And then not only that, you want to actually make more royalties and then get more advances and more success. And for that, you kind of need someone to help you. You know what I mean? You need that gatekeeper that you signed with to kind of open some doors for you, you know?
So you started, you went to school, you did the publishing deal. Mm-hmm. You kind of learned a lot about how the industry worked at the time.
Yeah.
But you did have some success afterwards.
Yeah. So after the publishing deal was kind of a dark time because I was kind of left floundering a bit. And I think, like, my ego and my confidence really took a hit. And actually, like you were saying, you're a guitar player, right? And during that publishing deal, it's so weird to think back, but, like, I'm a guitar player as well. I think I had the yips. Every time I played guitar on these tracks, they were always out of time.
Oh, my God.
Which is ridiculous because I never had that problem before.
Yeah.
And I haven't really had it since. But during that period, it was like, I think I totally understand, like, athletes that, you know, all of a sudden they can't pitch a ball.
A goalie that just, like, can't stop a beach ball.
Yeah, I really feel for them because I know what that's like. So I kind of floundered for a bit. And then I kind of got lucky that I started working with some younger deep house producers. And they were, this was just when Spotify was coming into North America. So I believe that, like, every time a new technology kind of comes into its own, there's ways to kind of exploit it. There's more opportunities. There's no paywalls to, because everyone's kind of trying to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention the service itself is, like, they want more users. So it's like, yeah, if, you know, like, there's
just, someone's going to put in all this effort, we're going to, like,
exactly. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
this is, like, early Spotify. I can't even remember when that, like, 2010. Is
that accurate? In Canada, I think it was more like, I feel like it was actually like maybe 2015 or so. Yeah. so what we would do is, I would do these little guitar loops. I would do vocal production. I would find singers for their instrumentals and whatnot. And we were just getting millions of streams because they were, you know, again, like, they were doing these playlists and whatnot.
That's, and they were understanding kind of how the algorithm works.
Yeah, and early, how to grow the following. Yeah, I think it actually started with YouTube. It was like these deep house YouTube channels. And a friend of mine, Tepno, was smart enough to kind of, he was like, you know what, I see that these channels are doing really well, I'm going to write a song for it, and he did, and he got me to co-write it with him, And within a few days, it had like 40,000 streams or whatever. And it was
and
like,
that's back then.
That was back then, yeah. And it was like,
which inflation streams, that's like 4 million now.
Yeah, for sure. So it was like, oh my God, what's going on here? And then he got signed to a label, and then he started another project. And these YouTube channels started kind of gravitating towards Spotify. And I was working with some people. And if we didn't get a few million streams, it was a failure.
Wow.
It was just and I was getting cut in on all these songs, and I was getting royalties from DistroKid, and
I got my royalties, by the way, from DistroKid. Mm-hmm. from the 5 years that I've been on there. No, 10 years.
Yeah.
And I got a hamburger.
Okay.
I'm not joking. That's real. Anyway, sorry.
So I got more than a hamburger.
Yeah. many hamburgers.
I got many hamburgers. I couldn't buy the hamburger restaurant, but my belly was full. So what ended up happening is, we were just getting all these streams, the other thing that was really exciting about it was, for the first time, and I don't really think people encounter this as much anymore, like, producers were asking these other producers, like, oh, who played that guitar? I want to get him on my track as well. And so I'd get these producers like, hey, I really like your sound. I really like what you're doing. Can you do something for me? You know? And it was like, wow, this is amazing.
It's happening. This is real.
Yeah. It was a really, really great time. So.
So for those listening, we got Ashton Price.
Mm-hmm.
Ashton Price in the house, Morph Productions. I always like to do that as people are like maybe tuning in, and mm-hmm. then it's like, who the heck? Great story. Who's talking?
Yeah, right?
So Ashton Price, he's in the house talking. And so as a guitar player to a guitar player, you know, I live in the world of rock. But one thing I love about this show is that I get to speak with people in all different spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week I had a hip-hop artist, and next week I've got country. I got everything. It's great. So how did a guitar player get into the EDM world?
You know, that's a good question. So I actually, it's funny because I love pop music. I love synth music. I love EDM music. But what got me into music was Led Zeppelin. And,
Do you have a favorite Led Zeppelin? Do you have a favorite Led Zeppelin song?
I think just off the top of my head, like one that I still listen to, like I'll just kind of pop it on, Since I've Been Loving You.
Great track.
Oh, man. Like that guitar solo is just...
Yeah.
So musical and just unbelievable. Just the whole song, you know?
Yeah. Anyways. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. So you're into Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, it's funny, like through my whole career, like even when I first got started, I was really into hip hop, and I would do beats. And because I played guitar, I would play these little guitar loops, and I would kind of make them sound like I sampled them, but I didn't. It was me. And so I was always doing that. So when I started getting contacted by these EDM people, it was just very easy for me to kind of transfer that, you know? And for me as a guitar player, I always say that I can't necessarily do a ton, but what I do very, very well. Mm. And the thing that I'm really interested in guitar and really anything musical is hooks and melodies.
Yeah.
So it's not about like some ripping guitar solo or some, it's all about like a theme. Like I guess you'd call it like a musical theme, like that something either, you know, in some cases, like something that you just loops really well in a beat, like say in a hip hop track or even a deep house track, but just, or like as far as melody, something you could actually sing rather than like just a little passing, a little da 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 da, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Even like the song that we just played, I Fall to Pieces, like mm-hmm. that, nah, 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 like that,
oh,
like
yeah,
melody
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
It's very hooky.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a great track. So that track that we started the show is actually your track
mm-hmm.
from your moniker, This Boy Electric.
Yeah.
But obviously your guitar and you're doing the production, all that. And you have other vocalists talking mm-hmm. on with you. So who sang on that one?
So that one was Moya Janelle, and I met Moya
really
Janelle.
Great voice, by the way.
Oh God. Yeah. She's incredible. She
Hamilton?
No, she's actually in Brampton.
Okay.
But she's someone that I was in Toronto for about 15, 16 years, and she was someone who came to me in, I think, 2012. And we worked on just tons of tracks. And I think what's inevitable is when you're working with somebody that much, like I almost call like a producer-artist relationship, it's almost like you have your partner, and then in some cases you have your producer, because you just get to know these people so intimately just with, you know, they're sharing their music, and this music is coming from a place that's, you know, can sometimes be very emotional, sometimes very private. And you know, the amount of time, not necessarily Moya, but the amount of times that like people have kind of been crying in the other room, and they have to, you know. So I was working with Moya forever, and we became friends. And so, yeah, so it was just natural to get her on a few tracks, or get her on things when I see that she fits, basically.
When did you know that song was done?
So this song is really funny, and it's funny you ask that, because I wrote that song in 2000. I think I actually started writing it in 2001. I finished writing it in 2002. And so the funny thing about it that I like to share is that each verse, because it took so long to write it, each verse is actually about a different relationship. And then I've just been sitting on it for the last 20 years. And every so often I'd kind of load it up and I'd kind of play around. I'm like, no, that's not right. And I'd leave it again. And I think this year I just kind of decided like, no, let me really mess around with that, and I'll get Moya to sing it. And then she sang on it in February, and I just let that sit for, that seems to be a theme. I let it sit till July, and I was kind of bored, and I called it up and I started playing around with it. And I like to describe it as I figured it out. You know, I figured out what the song wanted to be, and I finished it relatively quickly. And because it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty sad song, obviously, I thought, you know, I got to release this in November, you know, because there's there's no sadder month than December, you know.
If it wasn't for the fact that it's my partner's birthday in November, this whole month would be a disaster.
Yeah,
it's a tough one. I'm grateful that it's only 30 days.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny actually. My sister's birthday is December 21st, and I always like to joke that like the darkest day of the year.
Darkest
is my
day
sister.
Of the year. But it's all uphill from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I do love the fact that it has this like this sadness, this darkness. I think it's a beautiful track, and I think when you have a song that long, you almost like need to do it justice. Like,
yeah,
you can't just like you've had it for a decade or two, and you're like, I'll just throw it together. Like, now you want to, like, give this idea a proper home.
And Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Like, the longer you leave it, the actually, in a way, the more important it becomes, right? Because well, I've waited this long. It better be good. It can't be like that, what was that, Guns N' Roses album, Chinese Democracy? Like, where they spent, like, 10 or 15 years, and then everyone listened to them, like, oh, my God, this isn't, you know.
That would be the worst feeling. But anyways. Yeah. So we're talking to Ashton Price. Ashton Price, I will enunciate that so I don't mess it up. I just keep thinking Carey Price, and then everything's
there.
Good.
You go.
Let's throw another track on. So talking about like kind of moodiness and stuff like that, you're I would say a decade removed from me musically. And so what I asked at the beginning before the show is some of your influences, and one of them, which I'm really curious about, is Depeche Mode. And I say that because Depeche Mode is a band that I never really got into because they're a little bit before my time. But I feel like I would, if I understood them, I would appreciate them more. So we're going to play a Depeche Mode track. But why don't you cue us up, tell us the name of the track, and also like why people should care about Depeche Mode.
I think people should care about Depeche Mode because they were such a creative band. Like, you know, they were most popular in the 80s, but they have some of those 80s, obviously, like some of those influences. But if you compare Depeche Mode to, say, like New Order with the octave basses, and not to throw any shade at New Order, they have some great stuff as well, but they kind of really stood out on their own. And the thing I love about Depeche Mode is, and what I always try and incorporate into my own music, is there's that poppiness, but there's also that sadness. There's always that underlying sadness. So that's what I love about Depeche Mode.
Love that. Okay, so here is But not
Tonight.
All right, Depeche Mode, Inside the Music.
Oh,
Mode. Ashton Price. Morph Production. Inside the Music. Stereo Russ. And we're live. We are on the airwaves, as
they
say.
We are on the airwaves, yes indeed.
We are riding the waves.
No one can stop us.
No one's stopping us.
Yeah.
Hi everybody out there. I hope you're doing very well. I almost say, do you ever listen to who's that guy on the internet? Warren Hewitt, the Produce Like a Pro. Have you seen that guy?
No, I don't think so. I've watched a bunch of that kind of stuff, so maybe I've kind of come up with it. But
this guy, yeah, he has one line, and I always accidentally say his line every time. Like, I can't say it. He might sue me.
Yeah.
So we have Ashton Price in the house, music producer of 25 years. His studio is 25 years this year, which is like, for a business to last that long, especially an independent business, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it's you know, the other thing that I kind of like take pride in a sad way is that I got started when Napster kicked in. So I got started right when the whole music industry was blowing up. You know, and I was talking about how there was that guy that was signed to Sony in New York. They went to New York, the Sony building there. And I think like 1,000 people had just been let go and the building was just empty, you know, and everyone was kind of trying to figure everything out.
You mean blowing up as in like imploding?
Yeah, imploding. Yeah, yeah, it was just like no one, you know.
So how did that benefit you?
Or it didn't not benefit me at all.
Oh, sorry.
But I mean, I guess the one thing is that I've always, even though like I am kind of insecure, I do always kind of ultimately believe in myself. I always want to be in control of my fortune. And so I ran my business accordingly, you know, so I didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket, you know. So the thing I love about my business is that I've worked on so many different types of music. I do some corporate voiceovers. I've done audiobooks. And I've made sure that, you know, there's always something coming in, really diversified. And but yeah, it's, you know, definitely like it's an interesting time. And now, you know, with the AI stuff and some of the technology, like it's, there's always something kind of trying to screw us, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah,
you gave me too many avenues to go down. Okay. And now I don't know where to go. Yeah, like I think what you're doing is great. I think the having multiple streams is great. AI is kind of a weird one. Napster. I want to talk quickly about Napster.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something that's funny. So I used to teach, and I would always talk about like the history business class and stuff. And I would talk about like disruption and pivots, mm-hmm. and I'd bring up Napster.
Yeah,
and no high school kids know what Napster is.
Oh wow, yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, not one or two. I mean zero.
Yeah.
If anyone listening right now, if there's a teenager in your life, go ask mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, do you know what Napster is? They will. Not know.
No, that's crazy. Yeah,
that was the moment. That was so pivotal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like it got lost in the history books.
Yeah,
which just blows my mind.
Even though, yeah, I mean, like it just had such an effect on the industry. You know, I think what happened with Napster is Napster gave the people what they wanted, and the industry just refused to do that. Yeah. You know, and I kind of see that right now. I think about Napster when I'm trying to watch my Leafs games, and it's like, oh, I have TSN, but this one's on Sportsnet, but it's a blackout because I needed to have cable, and now we have Prime and all that. And you know, it's funny, the NHL is making the same mistake that the music industry did many years ago. You know, because people will find a way to get those. To get those games, you know,
yeah.
And they want it and they want to pay for it. I think, you know, the one thing with Spotify and a lot of people in music will be pretty negative about Spotify. But the one thing with Spotify is that it did get people paying for music again.
Yeah.
You know,
it was either that or pirating.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, at the very least, the industry and the money did absolutely shrink. There's no question. But at least there's money again and there is a legit stream. So that, to me, gives me hope anyway.
Can I put a theory out there and you
yeah.
can just like,
mm-hmm.
okay, here's a thought I have. People do complain and, you know, about like how Spotify has, you know, homogenized the industry and how there's no opportunity for young artists. But I would argue that there were also not really that many opportunities in the 90s either. It just like feels like there's more opportunities because it's the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. I think the one thing with it was just harder in a different way, right? I mean, in the night, you know, the other thing when I came up in the 2000s, that's when the labels were all merging.
Yeah,
right. So I had a manager at the time, and he was telling me that like when we were shopping some things we were doing, it's like, you know, 5 years ago I had eight doors to go to. Now I have three.
Yeah,
you know, So, but I think back in the day, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, there was ways to get through in the 90s and there's ways to get through now. I do think, though, there is a lot less money in the pot, you know, and I think there's also the people who are going to do well. They do incredibly well.
Yeah.
Like look at Taylor Swift now in Toronto.
She's doing all right.
Yeah, she's doing okay. And then, you know, the indie artist, it's a lot harder to make a living, you know, because I kind of feel that I might be one of the last, like not me personally, but like me and a bunch of other people like me, that last generation of kind of middle class music people where I have a normal life. I own a house. My son, I helped him get to college and everything and all the things with music. That's how I did it. And but no one knows who I am. You know what I mean? Like it's not like I had this big name or, you know, I didn't win the lottery ticket, right? Mm-hmm. That say not to say Taylor Swift isn't incredibly talented, but or any of those big people like The Weeknd or whoever. obviously they're incredibly talented to get there, but they did to a certain degree win a lottery ticket.
Of course.
Right? And I definitely haven't done that, but I've still been able to make a living doing what I love. I'm not sure if the next generation coming up is going to be able to do that. I kind of feel, or I worry, it's going to be all or nothing. You're either going to be like everybody knows you and you're huge, or you're kind of like, this is kind of my hobby and that's it.
Why do you think that is? And for those listening, this is Ashton Price talking, Morph Productions. Why do you think that is?
I just think there's, you know, again, there's just like less money in the pot.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's also, you know, the one thing that, the one carryover from Napster is everyone kind of had it in their head that music was free and it didn't really have any value. And that's definitely carried on. Like people are paying for Spotify or they're paying for their things. They're not necessarily paying that much. I always kind of wonder, like if you looked at it from an equation, whether like, so like, I think Spotify membership's maybe like $10.
Something like that, sure.
Okay. So you're paying $120 a year.
Sure.
$120 a year. So back in the day, a CD was like $20.
Yeah.
So was I buying 6 CDs or more? I probably wasn't.
I probably wasn't
buying more. Or maybe if I was, not that much more.
Yeah.
You know, and people will always talk about the way the royalties are distributed, and it's not necessarily my world, but I do find that a lot of the people that are saying that, like they're complaining about the royalties, like you look at their accounts and it's like they have 1,000 or that you know, that less than 1,000 thing. It's like, well, you weren't really going to make any money off that anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, we can go a bunch of different directions again there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The royalty thing I think is interesting. For those that don't know, it basically how it works is all the money that Spotify gets, it gets thrown into a pot, and then it just gets distributed equally. So if you have, if you put in your $10 a month and I only listen to Ashton's music, right? Ashton doesn't get all of my $10. That $10 gets distributed towards whoever. So it goes towards Taylor Swift and the Weeknd and whoever else. Whereas in theory, back in the day, when you'd buy a CD, like, yeah, that 10% or whatever percentage would go specifically to artists that I do. I do wish that there was kind of that balance, but yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, so the only thing with that, though, is that if you were... So I also think that, you know, there's probably some people like just shaking their fists right now listening to the radio, but...
Oh, yeah. I'd say call in, but I don't want.
Yeah.
I don't want the heat.
And my name is Ashton Prince.
Yeah. And my name is Blairio Truss.
I think you know, on the flip side, you'll see a lot of really big artists complain about the royalties from Spotify. But what they're not telling you is that their royalties from Spotify are getting filtered through their label. And so back in the day, you know, if you were signed to a record label, you weren't getting the full amount of the CD anyway. You were getting at best a dollar a CD.
Yeah.
But the little tricky thing about that was that you were paying back your advance that you got,
right,
of recouping your recording costs, your advance, all that. You weren't recouping that with the $20. You were recouping that with a dollar.
That's a good, you know, point.
So there was
advances. There's less advances these days.
Is that I'm just saying that if yes, Spotify, maybe they could be paying their artists more. Obviously, I want more.
Yeah.
But the labels, I mean, it wasn't so great under the label system either.
Yeah.
And then, and also if you're kind of under both systems where the industry is Spotify, but you're signed to a label, now you're getting double dinged. You're getting dinged from the new industry and the old industry at the same time. Yeah. You're a time traveler.
I think now's the appropriate time to get really into November spirit and talk about AI.
Yep.
Right?
I'm suitably unhappy and sad.
Me too. And for those listening, buckle up. So
yeah.
So we were talking a little bit off air about, like, you know, the use of AI. And I think, like, from a production side of things, I think that there are definitely some interesting tools that can be used. Just like reverb can be used as a tool, or delay, some certain AI techniques could be useful. Mm-hmm. But I'm not seeing right now a way that AI totally takes over. But you have actually a different perspective, and I want to hear your perspective, being that you have a lot more experience in this space.
So a few months ago, I experienced something that I didn't think was going to happen so quickly, but one of my clients said that he had a song that he had AI basically write, and he just put in a few prompts, and not only, like, it was like the full production with a vocal that, and I played it to people. I was just like, hey, check out this track. And they didn't know that it was all robotic and all like not real. And it was interesting though, because he got me, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't, and obviously it wasn't him singing. So he paid me to produce the track based off of what that AI demo was. So I recreated the music. Obviously, I added my element, made it sound better, and then he sang the track.
So you recreated it from scratch. You mm-hmm. used yeah. none of the none art, of none of it, but it was already there. It had the layers. It
yeah,
had
yeah.
the melody. It had the rhythm.
It was like paint by colors, right? Like, so I just had to kind of grab the elements. You know, there's some things I didn't like or that we didn't like, so I changed that, and I added my own flair to it. But it was, you know, 100% started with AI.
Okay.
And it was actually a really good song, you know?
I believe it.
Yeah. So it's, you know, so that's definitely coming. I mean, the question is, it's funny because my career has benefited so greatly from technology. It allowed me to work on my own, work on my own and do my own thing. And I didn't need $1 million or $500,000 studio to do what I do, right? But at on the other end of the scale, it's coming for me. You know, I was talking about the guitar stuff that I was doing with the Deep House producers.
And they were reaching out to you.
And I was talking about how, and I was kind of doing it in the past tense. And one of the reasons is because they just use Splice now. Or, you know, which Splice is like...
Yeah, for those listening, what's Splice?
Splice is it's a service that you subscribe to, and it gives you access to like hundreds of thousands of loops. So you just kind of grab a little guitar loop or a little theme there, and then you put it in, and you do your thing to it, and then there you go. So I've been kind of cut out, right? And I remember...
You've been spliced.
I've been spliced, yeah. So I actually remember when... the first time one of the producers had said that, like I kind of said, he'd reached out, said, this is what I'm looking for. And I'm like, okay, well, this is usually what I get for that. And he's like, oh, honestly, you know, I mean, I'll just, you know, I could just grab a loop from Splice. I'm like, oh boy, you know? Yeah. So I've benefited from technology, and then I've also had things taken away from me from technology. So I guess going back to AI, it's going to be interesting to see how that all pans out. The one thing, and I was telling you off air, is I think artists are a little bit optimistic about people. There's this kind of attitude from artists that, like, well, no, I want, you know, people want to hear a song from a person, and it's that connection and all that. But at the end of the day, if somebody hears a song and it resonates with them, they don't really care what it comes, who it comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, even for myself, I think one of the offshoots from Spotify is, and with streaming, is that I don't know half the artists that I listen to. The way I listen to music now is I hear a song I like, and I have a playlist, and I kind of usually go by season, maybe every half a year, and I have no idea who these people are. And every so often I hear a song that I'm like, oh wow, this one's really, I got to check out, you know. And usually I don't like the rest of the songs, you know, but there's that one that kind of resonated with me, and I don't really care about the person's backstory or their or whatever. It's just they did one hell of a great song in that, and that was good enough for me, you know.
Yeah, I find that fascinating that, like, AI is totally taking over in a way that I think people aren't really getting too attached to music anymore in the same way they used to. So, like, in the same way that we were attached to albums, like, you need to make an album. It's like, I feel like this generation might be like, you need to have music made by a human.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's almost the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And then who knows? Because the people who decide this are 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, currently 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, who will then be in their teens making the music decisions, and then in their adult years. Like, so for them, you know what comes to mind, actually? You know, like, remember the band Prozac?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Or even, like, Gorillaz?
Yeah.
Like, we liked that music independent of really who was behind it.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
They were avatars.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, like, there's no stopping in 2024, 25, music made AI that have avatars that people can gravitate to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we'll have to see what ends up coming of that. I mean, I think there's some exciting things, and then there's also some really scary things. I love that. I love that meme that was floating around when some of this stuff started. That is like, you know, I thought AI was going to do my laundry and my dishes, and I would make the music.
yeah. <know? laughs>
I didn't think it would be. I love that one. I love that one so much. Kind of going back to what you were saying about like generations and how they respond to music and the way it's made. I'm of the generation, it's, you know, I'm going to sound like old man here, but like I'm of the generation that you were kind of almost panned for using synth presets.
I remember that.
You know, so like it wasn't enough that you were coming up with the part, the synth part, you also had to make the sound.
Yeah.
You know, and if someone heard, oh, well, that was an M1 this, or if that was a DX7 this or that.
Thumbs down.
Yeah, it would be like, oh, you couldn't program your own sound. And then now... I had somebody recently, someone I knew from a long time ago, and I guess her niece had done this song, and it actually sounded really good, and I was, you know, she had posted it, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds really cool. She's like, yeah, she did it all herself. She just grabbed some loops, and she, you know, and I think, I'm not going to pan loops completely, but I mean, the one thing that I never expected with technology and music and all that is that I never thought the music was the chore. You know what I mean? I never thought that, like, oh, great, now I don't have to come up with a great guitar hook. They did, you know, like, yeah, the tuning the vocals, editing the vocals, editing things, you know, mixing, like, cleaning up the tracks and stuff. Yeah, like, give me all the stuff for that. But I didn't think the music was the chore.
Fascinating.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, so it's going to be interesting to see what this new generation does with that. Like, I mean, you know,
they ultimately decide.
Yeah.
Like we don't.
No,
we have our frame of reference and they have theirs. Like,
yeah,
I think it's, you know, and the question is, like, at the end of the day, what is art? What is music? Is music like the end result? Because if the music's the end result, then like there's nothing saying you can't just click AI to like, hey, write me a song that does beep, 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 bop. Mm-hmm. And then it's just written for you. And
yeah.
Like you can enjoy a playlist that you physically create yourself, yeah. Right?
Well, I was kind of thinking about that because when MIDI was first developed in the early 80s, and MIDI is the way that musical, like electronic musical instruments used to communicate. Now it's USB. But
yeah.
And the excitement behind all these keyboards, like, you know, doing drums and strings and all that, was it was supposed to kind of bring music to the average person, you know?
Yeah.
So if you think...
this is like the next evolution of that.
Exactly. I almost kind of think that, you know, it's like, you know, instead of like, you know, wow, I'm really sad someone broke up with me and I'm going to listen to this song. It's like, I'm sad. This is how I feel. Da, 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 da. Give it to me. You know what I mean?
Give me like, a song. And then it's going to take all the songs in the world that have ever existed. And like,
yeah.
That sounds like Nirvana singing, but has Jimmy Page guitar.
Yeah.
And there it is.
And it's about
actually, now that I'm saying this out loud,
it
sounds pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. For sure, yeah. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, and in one sense, that could be really great because it's a way for somebody who doesn't have that musical ability to kind of get that expression out.
Yeah.
But in the other way, you know, there is something to be said about like kind of getting to the point where, you know, you're learning the instruments and learning the things and developing yourself as an artist, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, who knows where it's going to, where it's going to go.
Astrum Price. This is like, what an episode. This is, we're chock full of goodies here. If you're listening and maybe you didn't catch the beginning of it, you can definitely catch, the replay of this. It'll be on my podcast, I don't know, universe, on at Stereo Russ. You can take a look there. And you can also find clips of this show and other past shows. I do like video clips at Stereo Russ on Instagram and TikTok and all those. And if you want to find Ashton, where can people find you?
My website would be morphproductions.com, MORPH. And then most of my social stuff is the handle is at MorphPro.
MorphPro. So, yeah. Okay. So check them out and work with them. So what I love too is like, is you know, music might have a finite future, and that's fine as far as like production goes like that. But, you know, you can still, like, there's still use for a recording studio and stuff like that. So one thing that I caught on your feed recently is that you did an audiobook of someone who I'm a fan of. You did Steve Dangle's podcast.
Yeah.
So I've got to ask, his audiobook.
Audiobook.
For those that don't know, he's a Leaf fan who does, like, Leaf content online, and he has a couple of books. And I do listen to audiobooks when I drive, and I'm always fascinated by the fact that, like, someone sat there and read the entire thing, and they probably didn't just, like, read it all in one go, and they probably did multiple things. So I just want to know, like, what in not too many words, because, like, you know, I don't want to get too deep into it, but, like, how the heck does a audiobook actually get made?
So first off, Steve Dangle was awesome, and it's funny because I was actually looking at not doing audiobooks anymore because I do them in Toronto, and just that drive is so hellish now. Yeah. And when they said it was Steve Dangle, I'm like, I got to do it. And he's exactly, he delivered it exactly as you see him on his YouTube channel and his podcast. So what you do is you have them read. It's a lot tougher now because it has to be done word accurate. When I started doing it years ago, you could kind of, what they would say is, as long as the meaning was intact, you know, you can change the odd word. Now it has to be word accurate. And I was told the reason for this is that in Audible, they want you to be able to listen to the audiobook on the drive home. And then when you get home, pick up your tablet and carry on reading it where you left off. And for that to happen, it has to be word accurate. So it's really, whenever I started, I always tell people, I'm like, listen, you're going to hate me because I'm going to say, like, oh, you know, you said can't, but it's written cannot. Yeah. And so what they do is they just read. When they make a mistake, you know, usually, like, every paragraph, some people can get through a page, maybe two, very rare. You stop them, get rid of the mistake, roll it back. They hear a bit of pre-roll to where they're going to start again, and then they just carry on. And
so you do basically all the editing on the fly.
All
the cut-ins.
Cut-ins, yeah. And then you record some room tone, and you have to kind of usually I don't edit. I work for some pretty big companies in the States. That's how I got the Steve Dangle one. I don't edit those books. I just record them. But so I just send it off with the room tone, and then someone else does that. Cleans but I have up. Edited them as well, and that's a process.
So how was Steve? Did he do a pretty good job?
Oh, God. I can't say enough good things about him. He was actually sick the last couple of days when he did it, and he sounded exactly like he had that energy right to, like, we do them in 6 hour blocks, and that last block right to hour six, he had that energy. He was perfect, and he was just such a great guy to work with. Like, if I, you know, you're sick, you're kind of miserable and stuff, but he wasn't, like, grumpy, or he wasn't, like, you know, giving any attitude or anything. No, he was awesome. Really great to work with him.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy to work with. Like, what a funny guy. I love his content. And as far as, like, you know, a local creator, like, he's definitely someone who I look up to. Someone who's, like, cutting his own path.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, he created that path for himself, you know. I remember he kind of got in my I'm more a TSN person, to be honest, than a Sportsnet person, but he kind of got in my radar because remember when the Leafs lost to Montreal in that series?
Yeah.
And
heartbreaking.
You know, and it was during COVID. It's like, well, what am I going to do with my life now?
Yeah,
like,
I can't. Whole lot of Novembers.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Yeah. It's like, I can't play hockey. I can't. And I remember just scrolling and that YouTube clip of him just freaking out. It just kind of, like, really resonated with me at the time, you know?
I love it.
Yeah.
Love
so,
it.
But that's the process of recording an audiobook, basically.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. So honestly, I think we're cutting it close. We're cutting it close here. So Ashton, like, just I just love this is such a great episode. Two more quick questions then. Number one, favorite Leaf of all time?
You know what, I'm gonna go really, really new and just say Austin Matthews.
Okay.
Just because I didn't really started playing hockey in the 2000s, but I didn't start really paying attention to the 2010s. Not a lot to go off of until
you got
Austin Matthews.
Tyler Bozak and
yeah exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And lastly, as before we wrap up, is how's your dog doing?
My dog is doing really great. She's getting lots of long walks in the woods. And I live in the north end of Hamilton, so I'm right by the water there. And so I'm just, like, always walking by the water. And, we got her about 2 years ago, and we feel like we won the doggy lottery.
She looks like a puppy, though.
Yeah, no, she's when we got her, she was two.
Nice.
And she's part Beagle and part Rottweiler.
Nice. So you live in the North End?
I do, yeah.
But I saw, okay, so I ran to Ashton a month ago, like in Dundas on a hike.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, da 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 da. Yeah, like, oh my God, there he is.
Yeah.
So were you visiting friends?
No, so funny story. I lived in Hamilton 20 years ago. I actually started my studio in Hamilton. And then I lived in Dundas, and I found those trails.
Oh yeah,
when I moved to Toronto, every year I was going to those trails.
Oh yeah, nice.
You know, so so now it's such a novelty for me to be able to just like kind of drive there in 20 minutes and do that loop. And
so that was just a one off.
Yeah, yeah. There's times when I kind of go through phases, but there's times that every day I'll do that. Right now I'm doing the waterfront, but every day I'll do that sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. It was meant to be.
Yeah, it was.
Meant to be. Okay. So for those listening, this has been Inside the Music with Sarah Rust. Thank you all for sticking around. This was Ashton Price of Morph Productions, 25 years. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That.
Thank
We're going to roll out with one more of your tracks. Can you cue it up for us as I cue it up?
Do you remember what we're doing?
No, I don't remember what track it was.
All right. Well, what do we got? We got this now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This Now Forever that I got to do with a really talented artist called Chalcedon. And we did it through COVID. And here we go.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Yeah, thanks.
Just say that you want me.